Today's daf is Bav Metzia daf Lamed Hey. We left off on the very top of daf Lamed Hey Amud Aleph. We had just posed a question on the sheet of Rav Huna. Rav Huna had said that whenever a shomer pays for an item that's no longer here, he has to swear that it's no longer here. He has to swear that he doesn't have it in his rishus, because we're concerned that maybe he just wanted to buy it and he knew that the guy didn't want to sell it to him, so he figures that he'll pay for it and he'll say that it's not here and he'll pay for it, and that way he will have bought it. So the Gemara challenged Rav Huna from a brisa. That's what we finished with yesterday. It challenged Rav Huna from a brisa. The Gemara is going to have three ways to defend Rav Huna from that challenge, and then the Gemara is going to challenge Rav Huna from a different case in that brisa. So that's going to take up the first half of Amud Aleph. Then the Gemara is going to get into the discussion of whether Shuma Hadar or Shuma Lo Hadar. When we assess a piece of property in order to pay somebody back money that he's owed, so you take away my property because I owed you money, and we assess that property for the value of that money. Once I come up with the money, can I demand the property back? Can I give you the money to be poda my property? And the Gemara is going to give four different cases where it's somewhat complicated to figure out whether Shuma Hadar or Shuma Lo Hadar. And then the Gemara is going to have, right before the Mishnah on base, three different opinions when someone who gets karka as payment can begin eating the peiros of that karka, meaning he may only have it for a temporary period of time till Shuma Hadar, till the person redeems the karka, but when am I allowed to start eating the peiros if I collected that karka as payment? Then the Mishnah on base is going to discuss what happens if someone rents an animal from somebody else, and then he takes that animal and he lends it to a third party. So Reuven rents out his animal to Shimon. Shimon's got the animal now, and Shimon lends it to Levi. And then the animal dies ba'ones. The halacha is that a shovel is chayiv in onsen, but a socher is pater from onsen. So Levi might owe Shimon the money, but Shimon might not owe Reuven the money. So that's a discussion. Can Shimon make money off of that deal? That he rented an animal for somebody else and he lent it out to somebody, which he probably shouldn't be doing, and now he's going to make money off of that deal? So you're allowed to do that? That's going to be a machlokas tanoim in the Mishnah, and the Gemara is going to discuss. There might even be a situation where the original owner of the animal is going to have to pay the renter, and he's going to have to pay him several times. We're going to be creative to come up with a case where that might happen. So let's begin again where we left off. We left off two lines from the top of Daf Lamed Hei Amud Aleph, but the question we left with was as follows. Rav Huna had this great chiddush that Mashbino so shvur sheinu b'rishuso, that we make the person who is paying, the shomer who's paying, rather than coming up with the item, take a shavua that he doesn't actually still have the item, because we're afraid that he's just using it as a way to purchase the item, that he really wants the item, and he's just using the shmira as a way to purchase the item. That was Rav Huna's chiddush. Then we had quoted a brisa that had four different cases of a dispute over a mashkon, over the value of a mashkon. The first two cases were where the lender lent the borrower a sella, and the mashkon, there's dispute whether the mashkon was worth as much as the loan, or the borrower gave the lender a mashkon, and now the mashkon is gone. So the dispute was the mashkon worth as much as the loan, or was it worth less than the loan, and therefore the borrower still owes the lender some money? And the other permutation in the first half of the brisa was the dispute was how much less than the loan was the mashkon worth. But the it's all on the side of less than the loan. Then the second half of the brisa was where the mashkon was definitely worth at least as much as the loan, but the dispute was it worth exactly what the loan was worth, or was it worth way more than the loan was worth? Or was it worth a little more than the loan was worth, or was the mashkon worth way more than the loan was worth? So the second half of the brisa was all about how much money the lender is now going to owe the borrower, because he lost this mashkon that was worth more. And when does he have to take a shvuah? When does he not have to take a shvuah? So we had suggested that the Gemara had suggested that in the case of the Seifa Dereisha, what was the Seifa Dereisha? I lent you a sella, and the mashkon you gave me back was only worth a shekel. It was worth much less. And the borrower says, no, you lent me a sella, but the mashkon was not worth much less. It was only worth a little less. It wasn't worth half of the loan. It was worth 3/4 of the loan. So amoda that I still owe you money, the borrower says, but not as much money as you say. So then we say that he's chayiv a shvur, because that is a classic case of a moda b'miksas, that the shvur really should be the lover's shvur. Now comes along the Gemara, comes along Shmuel and says that, you know what, we have to flip the shvur. We have to make sure that the malv is the one to take the shvur over there and not the lover. Because since the lover is the one that's really chayiv min haTorah, but we're afraid that what's going to happen? The lover is going to take the shvur. The mashkon was worth half of what the loan was worth. It was worth only $50, not $100. Then you know what the malv is going to do? Oh yeah? Look what I found. It's the mashkon. And he's going to show that the lover's shvur was false. So we flip the shvur onto the malva. So the Gemara says, yeah, but if Rav Huna is correct, that whenever anyone has a pikadon, he always has to swear that whenever the issue is resolved, that he's not holding on to the pikadon, that he doesn't still have the pikadon, why are we concerned that the malva is going to take out the pikadon? He can't take out the pikadon. He just swore that he no longer has it. So why do we flip the shvur onto the malva and say, I know, lova, you're the one that's really chayiv in the shvur min haTorah, but we can't make you take the shvur because we're afraid the malva is going to pull out the pikadon. The malva is never going to pull out the pikadon. He has to take a shvua that he no longer has the pikadon. So that was the kasha we left off with. So the Gemara is going to have three ways of resolving that. Number one, the Gemara says, second line from the top, Amar Rava sheyesh edim shenisrafa. The case is the malva never had to swear that he didn't have the item because there were edim that it was already destroyed, that it was already burnt. So if there are edim that it was already destroyed, he's not going to have to swear that he doesn't have it. Frak the Gemara, yeah, but if there are edim that it's already burnt, so why would the whole reason we flip the shvua onto the malva and we don't make the lova take the shvua is we're afraid as soon as the lova takes the shvua, the malva is going to pull out the item. But if there are edim that it's already burnt, what's the concern that the malva is going to pull out the item? Where's he going to get it? It's destroyed. No, what we really meant is not that there were edim that it was burnt, that it was destroyed, but that there were edim that it was stolen. So the malva doesn't have it, and therefore the malva is not going to have to take a shvua that he no longer has it, because we know he no longer has it, yet we're still concerned that as soon as the malva swears, the malva is going to pull it out. Ask the Gemara, sof meicha maisila. But if it was stolen from him, where is he going to pull it out from? The Gemara says, the tarachu maisila. He's going to find the ganav. As soon as the lova swears, and the malva is sure that what the lova is saying is not true, the lova is saying that it's worth X amount of money, and the malva knows that the pikadon, that the mashkin was worth X minus Y amount of money, so the malva is going to go and he's going to find that ganav, and he's going to find that pikadon. Yeah, but then we still have the same concern even when the malva swears. So if the malva is going to swear that it was worth X minus Y, the lover is going to say, no, it was worth X amount of money, not X minus Y. And he's going to find the ganav, and he's going to take out the pikadon. We should have the same concern. Says Mar, no. The malva knows who's been around his house. So he likely knows who has the money. It's easier for him to investigate and find the ganav. He'll look at his security footage. He'll figure out who's been in and out of his house. But the lova has no idea who's been in the house of the malva, so he has no way of researching where the ganav is. So if the malva takes a shvur, we're not worried that the lova is going to somehow come up with the item and say, look, it's not worth what you said it was, because the lova has no way of finding the item. But if the lova takes a shvur, we are worried that the malva is going to come up with the item, even knowing that right now the malva doesn't have it, because we have edim that it was stolen. So that is all answer number one. How do we defend Rav Huna? Then we defend Rav Huna by saying, yes, it's true. The malva normally does have to take, whoever has the pikadon normally does have to swear that he no longer has the pikadon. But not if there are edim that it was stolen from him, then he wouldn't have to swear. And nevertheless, we're still worried that if the lova swears, the malva is going to take out the pikadon because he's going to find it. He's going to go out of his way to find the pikadon. It's interesting, the Rambam writes in the Hilchos Shelo Pikadon that something that's kol mino shava. Let's say, you know, they're arguing about how much the pikadon is worth. Let's say the pikadon is a brand new edition edition of an art scroll Gemara, right? So it's art scroll Bamitzia, you know, unused. So they're arguing, was it worth $30? Was it worth $35? How much is it worth exactly? So what do you mean, arguing? Don't argue. Go to the store and see how much it sells for. Okay, slight discrepancy in Z. Berman's versus whatever, but, you know, basically you get an idea of exactly how much it's worth. They're arguing about it. The Rambam says, obviously we're talking about something unique. We can't be talking about something that's on the market and that everyone knows what the price is going to be. So the Rambam says, anytime it's kol mino shaven, you could find it in the shuk, like peros, yuriel, shel tzemer, shel pishtan, where all these things are, where there's no handiwork, there's nothing that makes it particularly unique. If it's nignav or nevad from the Beis HaShomer and he pays the bailim, so he doesn't have to swear that it's ainer b'reshuso. What, he's going to swear that it's ainer b'reshuso? He's going to swear that I don't have it? Why did Rav Huna say that you have to swear that it's ainer b'reshuso? Rav Huna said you have to swear that it's ainer b'reshuso because we're afraid he really wanted to buy it. He wanted to buy this item. You want to buy it? Go to the store and buy it. Why do you have to make up this whole story? You have to lie as a way of buying it. That's how you're going to buy it. So the Mefarshim all ask on the Rambam. So if that's the case, then what's the Gemara's kasha from the Mishnah and Shavuos on Rav Huna? You could just say the Mishnah's talking about something that's mino matzui, that you don't have to swear in it. Meaning, what was the Gemara's whole kasha on Rav Huna? How can you, Rav Huna, say that you have to, that the guy is always going to have to swear that he doesn't have it? But over here in the if the guy's always going to have to swear that we don't have it, how are we afraid that he's still going to take it out? So maybe according to the Rambam, the answer is very simple. The guy doesn't always have to swear that he doesn't have it. The guy only has to swear that he doesn't have it if it's something that's unique, if it's something that's rare. But if it's not something that's unique, he doesn't have to swear that he doesn't have it. So that's the kasha they ask on the Rambam. So in the Chidushim HaMiuchasim L'Ritva, he suggests that the Mashmos of the Mishnah is a Mashkon Stam, sounds like it could be talking about any type of Mashkon. Whether it's a Mashkon that's sold in the stores or a kind of mashkon that's not typically sold in the stores. Okay, but all of that so far was our first defense of Rav Huna. Says Gemara further, Abaye Omer, Gzeira Shema Yitam V'yomelo Achar Shavua Mitzasiha. We're afraid that the reason why we're afraid he's still going to take it out, even though he already swore that he doesn't have it, is because he's going to say, I didn't have it. I swore that I didn't have it. I didn't have it. But then I found it afterwards. So since we're afraid he's going to do that, he's still going to pull it out. That's why we say in the Mishnah that the Malva has to take the Shavua. A third answer for Rav Huna, Rav Ashi Amar, Zenishba V'Zenishba. Now, it's not a question of who swears. Does the Lova swear? Does the Malva swear? They're both swearing. The Lova is going to swear because he's really the Moda B'Miktsas. The Malva is going to swear that he doesn't still have it. The Mishnah is not saying we take the Lova's Shavua away from him and make the Malva swear to the value of the item. No. It's a question, Zenishba Sheinu B'Rishusov, Zenishba Kama Yeshava. The Malva swears that he doesn't have it. The Lova swears how much it was worth. So what did the Mishnah mean when we said that instead of making the Lova swear, we make the Malva swear? If they're both actually swearing, Navachi Kamar. Minishba Tchila. The discussion was who swears first. And that's what we're saying. Malva Nishba. We make the Malva swear first, so that it's meaning the kasha is exactly the point. It's exactly what the Mishnah is trying to say. What are we asking? What's the point of the Malva? Why does the Malva have to swear? What are you worried about? That the Lova is going to swear, the Malva is going to pull out the Pikadon? The Malva anyway swore that he doesn't have the Pikadon. And the answer is exactly. That's what the Mishnah was saying. Let the Malva swear first that he doesn't have the Pikadon. And then we could be very comfortable with the Lova swearing, because we don't have to worry that the Malva is going to pull out the Pikadon. He already swore that he doesn't have the Pikadon. So that was exactly the point of the Mishnah. Not that the Lova doesn't swear. The Lova is the Moda B'Miktsas. He swears. But that the Malva swears first that he doesn't have it, so that we have no further concern that the Malva might pull out the Pikadon after the Lova swears. Period. Rav Huna bar Techlid Mishmei Drava Amar Reisha DeSeifa Tiyufta L'Rav Huna. That maybe there's a different part of that Mishnah that's a kasha on Rav Huna, because it also spoke about a case of the Reisha DeSeifa, which was as follows: Sela Hilvi Sani Alav Shtayim Hayeshava. the borrower said, you know, you lent me $100 and that was very nice of you, but I gave you a mashkon that was worth $200 and now you lost it, so you owe me an extra $100 now because I gave you a mashkon that was worth twice as much as the loan. V'alo omer loki, and the other guy said, not true. I agree that you don't owe me any money anymore, but I don't owe you any money either. I lent you $100, you gave me a mashkon that was worth exactly $100, meaning I'm kofar hakol, I deny it all. Halach is potter. The malva does not have to take a shavua. But wait a second, if any time you ever held the pikadon in your hand, Rav Huna is correct that you're always going to have to take a shavua, that at least you don't still have it. Rav Huna is correct that anyway he's taking a shvuah that he doesn't have it. Well, it's true, kofar kol doesn't take a shvuah. But once the guy is already taking a shvuah for something else, we have a concept called gilgul shvuah, that if someone's taking a shvuah for one thing, we'll say, okay, once you're swearing already, we'll make you swear about the other thing also. So once he's remigo de mishtava mal v'shenu b'reshuso l'shtava namia gilgul shvuah kama ha'yishave, once he's swearing that it's not in his reshus, so you should have to take a gilgul shvuah for how much it actually was worth. So that's the kasha on Rav Huna. Amr Rav Ashi, Amrisel Shmaita Kamed Rav Kana, said this in front of Rav Kana, Va'amr Li, Tehei Bima Amino. Now, the reason he's not going to be Megalgel the Shavua on him was that he trusts him. Meaning the case is, he never had to take the Shavua in the first place, because the Lova trusts the Malva. V'nehemne Lova L'malva Nami Baha. Well, meaning he trusts the Malva never had to take the first Shavua that he no longer has it, because the Lova believes the Malva that he no longer has it. So if the case is that the Lova believes the Malva that he no longer has it, so there's no Shavua to get the Gilgul started. So it says, but why does he believe him that he no longer has it, but he doesn't believe him how much he says it was worth? Meaning the borrower says to the lender, I trust you that you don't have it, you're not holding on to my item anymore, but you're lying about how much it was worth. You're saying it was only worth a sela, I'm telling you it was worth 2 slug. Why don't you believe him about that as well? So says Mar Lo Kimle Begave. It's not that I don't believe you, I just don't believe you know how much it was worth, because it's not your item, it's my item. I know how much it was worth. So says Mar Nahamne Malva Lulove de Kimle Begave. So says Mar, well, why doesn't the Malva believe the Lova how much it was worth? After all, it was an item that belongs to the Lova. Doesn't the Malva realize that the Lova has a better idea of how much his own item is worth than the Malva will? Well, because it was only a mashkon by me. By him, it's really his item. Says Mar Lo Mehemle. The Malva has no trust for the Lova. He doesn't believe the Lova in anything. So we're making an assumption over here. The whole case is built on the assumption that the borrower trusts the lender, and therefore he's not going to make him take a shvua that he doesn't have the item, because he trusts him. He doesn't believe him about how much it's worth, because he doesn't think that he's qualified to assess it. But the lender has no trust for the borrower, and that's why he's getting into an argument with him about how much it was worth. Why do we make that assumption? Says Gemara, Lova Mekayim Lei B'Malva Tumas Yisharim Tinachim. Malva Mekayim Bei B'Lova V'Sof Bogdim Yashtam. These are big Bali Bitachon over here, big Bali Amuna, that the borrower believes about the Malva. Look, he's such a rich man. Would the Ribbono Shel make him rich if he wasn't honest? Is there such a thing as a rich man is dishonest? So it's got to be that he's completely honest. And the Malva assumes about the Lova. Why is the Ribbono Shel Olam not trusting him with money? He needs money. He has to borrow money. The Ribbono Shel Olam is not trusting him with money. It must be because he's not to be trusted. If he was to be trusted, Hashem would have given him money. Very, very difficult to assume that that's the psychology of people. But I guess sometimes people just have there are studies about this, about people trusting good-looking people and rich people, that there's just like this natural trust that people have, even though there's nothing that warrants that natural trust. Okay, so that's what you have to assume. It's talking about not whether in reality they're Nehmanim. It's talking about what people assume about other people. Ha'u gavre da'afkid kipi gabei chavre. So the Gemara tells us a story now. There was a guy that gave as a pikadon, he gave rings or jewelry as a pikadon to his friend. Amalei havli kipi. So he said to his friend, okay, pay up. Amalei, you know, I'd like my pikadon back. Amalei lo yadana hechusvinu. I have no idea where I put them. I don't know where they are. Meaning, I'm not saying they're stolen. I just don't know where I put them. I put them away somewhere really safe. So safe, I have no idea where it is. So also the Kamei to Rav Nachman, they came to Rav Nachman, what do you do? Amalei kolo yadana pshiusahi. He says, when you don't know where you put something that was entrusted to you, that's negligence. That's pshius. Zil shalim. Go and pay him. So that was the psak of Rav Nachman. The Ritva explains, what is the pshius exactly? What exactly is his negligence? Where's his point of negligence? So the Ritva says the pshius is that he put it in a place that he wasn't going to later find it. He put it in too good of a hiding spot. Meaning a person should have a spot where he knows that that's his go-to spot, where he's always going to be able to find it. So that was his pshius, and not in his initially placing it in too good of a hiding spot. The Nesivus writes that the pshia that we're talking about over here is not on the shmira, it's not midine shmira, it's midin mazik. Even if you're not a shomer, you're chayiv if you hide something too well. Let's say I go to your house, and I see that you left something out, and I know there are going to be a lot of guests at your house, and I'm worried for you. I'm worried you're having this party in your house, that someone's going to walk away with some valuable item. So I take your valuable item without telling you, not to steal it, to hide it, so that you'll always, and I hide it so well that we have no idea where it is. I'm not a shomer, I'm still posheya, and I'm still going to be chayiv. This pshius is not midine shmira, it's midin mazik, that I took your item and I put it in a place that you can never find it. But anyway, that there are achronim, however, that say that the pshia is not that, the pshia is the shikha. The pshia is not that I put it somewhere that was such a good hiding place. The pshia is, I'm allowed to put it in a place that's a good hiding place, it's I'm not allowed to forget about it afterwards. My negligence is in forgetting. And that opens up a whole discussion in the Achronim. Is forgetting negligence? Do we always assume that forgetfulness is negligence? Where does that matter? So it matters all the time. There's a halacha that if a person misses a tefillah, so there's something called tefillas tashlumin, that you make up the tefillah with the next day, you miss a shachris, you daven a double shmona esrei at mincha. But you're not always entitled to daven a double shmona esrei at mincha. Sometimes, you know, you missed and you missed. If a person was negligent, was completely negligent, he had every opportunity to daven shachris. One minion came and he said, I'm not in the mood now. He has every opportunity until this month passed. So he can't make up a tefillah later on. He's posheah. What about someone who's shocheach? What about a person? He forgot to daven. It slipped his mind. So do you say that is that really true? That any shchichus, anytime you forget something, you're shocheach, something that you should have remembered, that you ought to have remembered, that that's going to be considered posheah? If that's the case, that would take away a lot of our opportunities for tefillas tashlumin. So that's a discussion in the poskim. What exactly the gedarim are when it comes to negligence and the tefillah. Magen Avraham paskins in Simon Kufches that someone who didn't daven because of shikha is not called a posheah. It's and there is an onus, and he is allowed to be mashlim the tefillah. But Magen Avraham, same author, in Tavkuf Chav Zayin, when it comes to the halachas of Erev Tavshilin, what happens if I forget to do an Erev Tavshilin? So there's a halacha that the rabbi of the city hopefully remembered, and the rabbi of the city, when he makes Erev Tavshilin, makes an Erev Tavshilin on behalf of everybody in the city. It's interesting, the Nusach printed in the Machzor says on behalf of everybody in the city. So everyone's really making on behalf of everyone in the city, but they probably don't realize that that's what they're doing. So only the rabbi actually realizes that's his responsibility, and he's making for everybody that's in the city. So what if, but the halach is you're only allowed to rely on that Eruv if you forgot, but not if you were posheah. If you couldn't do an Eruv, you were busy, whatever, not if you were posheah. What if you forgot? If you forgot, is that considered posheah? So Magen Avraham writes in Tavkuf Chav Zayin, name Marshal, that it depends why you forgot. If you forgot out of laziness, you're not charid l'dvar Hashem, it's just not a priority to you to take care of these things, so then it's considered posheah. But if you forgot because you were busy, so then it's not considered posheah. Not so easy to judge, you know, how much, you know, how busy do you have to be to forget about the mitzvahs that you have to do? Meaning, and when do you say that that's busyness, that's just being busy, and when do you say that that's called, that you're not charid the Dvar Hashem properly? I don't know, it's a very hard thing to judge. But it's interesting that this idea, that pshiusa, is that we call it pshiusa. So if you say, like the Ritva, that no, his pshius was putting it in a safe place, then this whole discussion doesn't begin. But if you say, like the those achronim that suggest that it's the shikha, the Shar Ephraim, and the Shvus Yaakov, that say that it's the shikha that's the pshius, then this discussion does begin. So anyway, Rav Nachman Paskin, you have to pay. You don't know where you put it, you got to go pay. So, lo shalom. He didn't, lo shilim. He didn't pay. So what's the next step? A guy owes money, doesn't pay. Also, Rav Nachman agve la padne mine. Rav Nachman went and he assessed how much his house was worth, a certain home that he owned, and it was worth as much as the jewelry that he had lost. So good. So they collected. They took, they confiscated this property from him. L'sof ishtakach kipi ve'yakur. Later they found the jewelry and the jewelry went up in value. It became more precious. So when now it's worth way more than the house was worth. So Rav Nachman, how do you keep the So Rav Nachman says, okay, everything goes back. Make sure the jewelry goes back to the original owner. The house is going to go back to the original owner. Now at this point, the guy who had his house taken away was probably saying, keep the house. I'm very happy for you to keep the house. I'll keep the jewelry. Meaning I already paid up when they took my house from me. Now the jewelry is mine. No, the jewelry is not yours. You got to give the house back. You got to give the jewelry back. So Amar Rav Yisimna Kamed Rav Nachman. We were sitting and we were learning about Rav Nachman, and we were learning Perek HaMafkid. V'armalei shilem v'lo ratzi lishava v'lo ahaduli v'shaper avid lo ahaduli. He said, and he said to him, if he pays and he doesn't want to swear, meaning shilim v'lo ratzi lishava, he said, isn't this against our Mishnah that shilim v'lo ratzi lishava? What did our Mishnah say? That if instead of doing what you would be entitled to do, which is to take a shavua and be off the hook and not have to pay, instead you pay your lo ratzi lishava, so you pay for it. As soon as you pay the money that you owe, the item now belongs to you, and therefore you're entitled to the kefel if we ever find the ganav. So why over here? The guy paid his pal. He already paid with his property. So once he paid with his property, shouldn't that jewelry now belong to him? So whatever increase in value it has is his. Why does he have to give back the jewelry? So v'lo ahadili. And Rav Nachman didn't respond. He said, that was my taina on Rav Nachman in the way he was done this din Torah, and Rav Nachman didn't respond to this taina. And he says, you know what? V'shaper avid lo ahadili. He did well by not responding to me. I didn't deserve a response because it's obvious. My time up, hasam lo atrache lebedina. You see the difference? In the case of our Mishnah, the reason that the person is more than happy to allow me to be kone, the object that I was a shomer chinam on, is because I made life as easy as possible for him. As soon as it got lost, I said, no problem, I'm paying it right off the bat. He didn't have to sue me, he didn't have to hire a lawyer, nothing, he didn't have to go through any headaches. I just paid him right off the bat. In as hakar satov to that, he's willing to be machne to me the item as soon as I pay for it. But when it comes to the case of Rav Nachman, he had to go to the Beis Din. Rav Nachman said you have to pay. He didn't pay. Then he had to go and get an assessment on the property. I'm not going to be so generous to such a person. Yeah, no problem. As soon as you pay me, the rings or the jewelry, whatever it is, now belongs to you. No! If the jewelry goes up in value, it's still mine. I still want it. You're not entitled to anything. So that's the difference between the two cases. But says the Gemara, but from Rav Nachman's psak, we do see something very interesting. Here we collected a property for a payment of something, and we say that the property goes back, that as soon as the payment can actually be made with what it's supposed to be made with cash, or in this case with jewelry, the property goes back. This seems to be a raya that Rav Nachman holds Shuma Hadar, that when you have an assessed property and that property was used for payment, it goes back when the person is able to come up with the money. So right away the Rishonim are not so pleased with this raya. What do you mean? This is a raya. What does Shuma Hadar mean? Shuma Hadar is to benefit who? When I owe you money and I don't have any cash, so they take away a property of mine. Shuma Hadar means that as a takana for Tikkun Olam, to make my life easier, to make it better for me, that once I come up with the cash, I should be able to get my property back. So when I come up with the cash, I'm able to get my property back. It's for my benefit. But over here, Rav Nachman is going against the guy whose property was taken away from him. He didn't want his property back. He wanted to be able to keep these rings. So this has to do with Shuma Hadar. This is the exact opposite of Shuma Hadar. That's the kasha of the Ramban and the Rashba. The whole din of Shuma Hadar is Asisa Yashav Hatov. You want to be nice to the guy. Over here, it's not being nice to him. So they suggest that maybe it's like a Kal V'chomer, that it's a Kol Shekein. That the Diyuk of the Gemara is, if in this case where the Shomer doesn't even want his house back, nevertheless the Shuma comes back, so for sure where he wants it back, he should be able to get it back. So that's the Lima. The Lima is through a Kal V'chomer. Rabbi Elchanan says that the Shomer is towing that from the moment that they took the Apana from him, the Nizam became his, and it was in his resource that they were Nisyak. hadar. So it sounds like without that, the shuma would be hadar. If not for the din of shuma hadar, the shuma would be zocha in the increased value as well. But okay, so the Rishonim struggle with that issue. But says Gemara, ooh, so shuma hadar. So says Gemara, is this a raya? Says Gemara, no, shiny hasam. This is not a case of Shuma Hadar, because the whole thing was Betos. It was all on a mistaken premise. Why did we assess his property? Because he said he didn't know where the jewelry was. We thought we were never going to see this jewelry again, that it was gone, that it's not really in his house. But really, they were really in his house the whole time. So since the whole Shuma and the whole collection of the property was only Betos, it was on the false premise that we were never going to see this again, so that's why the shuma reverses in that case. But generally speaking, maybe Rav Nachman holds that shuma is not hadar. That you can always buy back the property that was taken from you up until 12 months. He says, I'm from Narda. We have been told that you can always get it back. And that's what we passed in, that you can always get it back. You're supposed to do right by the guy, so he shouldn't have his property confiscated forever. You should be able to get it back. There is a machlokas if the din of Shuma Hadar is like a new sale, that when I get it back, it's like I just bought the property back, or it's like a siluk of the malva from what he was gove the chov, and the gviya is nisbatel, that we're mevatel the gviya sachov. Tosa says that minadin, we're not machsir, because it's mechuri hilo, that it now belongs to him. The malva was eating from the peros of the karka, and he certainly doesn't have to pay back for the peros that he ate over the years that he had the karka. So you see from Tosa that he also, it's like a mechira chadasha, that it belonged to the malva that whole time, and now you'll get it back. Now you're going to get your property back, because you came up with the money. But that's a new purchase. It's a purchase that you're allowed to force me to make, that you're allowed to force the malva to make, but that's it. But it's a purchase. That's the way Tosa understands. The Ran disagrees. The Ran says that no, the Chum were misakein, not that you can make a new sale, but that Shuma Hadar, that we reverse the Gviya Sachov. That's the mechanics of it. Okay, big discussion, what the nafkaminas are. Says Gemara, four situations where Shuma Hadar becomes an issue, where Shuma Hadar becomes a discussion. Situation number one, says the Gemara. Pshita, it's obvious if Shamalei Lebal Chov, if they did an assessment of land for a person who owes money to a Bal Chov, Vazaliyu v'shamal Lebal Chov Didei, and then the guy who collected that land used that land to pay off his own Bal Chov, Samrina Lelo Adifat Migavar Da'asas Minei. If the original guy who owned the property wants to get his property back, he's allowed to go to the person who has it now, and he can say, you are no more powerful than the person who took it from me. He was a Bal Chov to me, so you're a Bal Chov to him, just like he has to do so do you. Second case, Zabna. Let's say the person took the property and then he sold it. Or Orta, he gave it over as a Yerusha. Yava Matana, he gave it as a Matana. No, those people who go to get that property, where they buy the property, they're not interested in the money. If they were interested in the money, they never would have bought the property in the first place. Even if you give it to me as a matana, it's not the money that I'm going into the property for, it's the property that I want. And therefore, the original owner cannot go to those people and get his property back. He can go to the person who initially collected his property and try to get his property back, but once it's been sold on further, or given over by Yerusha further, or by Matana further, then he loses the rights to do it. Third case, Shamla Liisha V'insiva. They do an assessment of karka for money that was owed to a woman, and then the woman got married. Oshamu minad isha, or they do an assessment of property that the woman owned, so because she owed money to somebody else. V'insiva, and then she gets married. Umesa, then the woman dies. What's the role of the husband? Bal b'nichse ishta lokeach havi. The husband is considered a lokeach, and therefore lo mahader. He doesn't have to return the property. Meaning, if it was a case where the woman collected this property and then she died, it's as if she collected it and then sold it to her husband, and therefore the husband does not have to return it, like we just said in the previous halacha. And if it was the reverse, lo madrinan lei. If it was the woman's property that was taken from her, so since the husband is only considered a lokeach, we don't have to return it to him. He can't say, I'm a Yoresh, and therefore I'm coming to get my property. He's a Lokeach, he has no chus in that property at all. Damar Rav Yosef Chanina bu Usha iskina. They made a takanas Usha. Isha shemachar minichsei melug bechaye bayla umesa bal motzi miyad alakuchos. That a woman who sells nichsei melug while her husband is alive, the husband could be motzi miyad alakuchos. He has a din of a lokeach, not a din of a yoresh. If he was din of a yoresh, he wouldn't be able to be motzi miyad alakuchos. And then the fourth halacha relating to Shuma Hadar so is as follows: Agbe ihu. What if they didn't assess Bezin never assessed the property. Agbe ihu b'chovo. They're between themselves. They said, you know what? Take this property, and they say, yeah, it's roughly worth what I owe you, without having to go to Bezin. So pligi b'ravach v'ravina. Chadam r'hadra v'chadam lo hadra. Can he get his property back when he comes up with the money? There was never an official assessment done in Bezin. Mandi amalo hadra, the one that says he cannot get it back. Savar ha'izvini malyehi. Dami died to dinaf shei agbe. That this is a regular sale because he gave me midaito. He gave me instead of giving me the money, he gave me this property. And you don't say shuma hadar in a sale. You say shuma hadar when something was taken away from him because he couldn't afford to pay his debts. Umandi amar hadra, and the one that says that shuma is hadar savar lo zvini malyu. This isn't a sale. Vaydag midaito v'los ludina machus ksufu dagbe. You know why they never went to Bezin? He didn't want to have to suffer the indignity of going to Bezin and having his property be assessed by Bezin because he can't afford to pay his debts, so he just paid it quietly, and that's through giving this property. But it's not a sale. There's no illusion of a sale over here. We know exactly what was going on over here. It's a shuma, but it was a shuma that was done privately, and therefore it's hadar. Says the Gemara. At what point does a guy who collects property in lieu of money, is he allowed to eat the peros from that property? Ume'emas achal piri. So the Gemara has three possibilities. Rabba Amar Mikimatya Adrachta Liyade. As soon as he gets the Shtar Adrachta, meaning 90 days after the Psak Din comes out in Bezin that this guy has to give property in place of the money, so Bezin gives the or he has to give money or he has to pay, so Bezin gives the Toveya a Shtar that wherever he can find in the Nechasim that belong to the Lova, he's going to be able to confiscate that Nechasim. As soon as he has that Shtar, any Peros that grow in the Karka that he later finds belong to him from the moment he has that shtar. Abayi says even before that, Edom b'chasum of Zachlo, even before we deliver the shtar to him, as soon as the Edom signed the shtar that entitled him to collect property from the other fellow, from the borrower, from the lova, at that point already, he's entitled to it. Rava Amar mikishlumi me'achrasta. Rava says, no, you got to wait till way longer than that. After the days of Achraza are over, and not before that. Meaning, even once he has the Shtar Adrachta, what does he have to do? He has to find a property that he thinks is suitable and that will actually cover it. And then, based on his Machriz, this property is for sale, so they could see what the market value of that property is. And then, after the days of Achraza, we know how much it's worth, then you can go collect it. It's only after that Achraza happens that he can start actually eating the peros. Okay, new Mishnah. Hasokha Peramachavera Vishil. Someone rents a cow from his friend and then he lends it out to somebody else. Umesa kedarka, and it dies in a normal way. It's considered an ones. So Shoal is chayiv to pay, but the for Mesa kedarka. But a socher would not have to pay for Mesa kedarka. So here's what happens: Yeshava socher shemesa kedarka. The socher just swears that it was actually Mesa kedarka, and that way he gets off the hook. He doesn't have to pay the original owner. Shoal yishalim the socher, but the shoal is going to have to pay the socher because the shoal is chayiv and onsim. Amar Rav Yosi, Ketzav Alos Haschar B'Parasa Shel Chavero. How's that fair? That he's going to be able to do business and make money off of someone else's para? No, El Tachsa Para LeBaylim. He has to pay. The shoal has to, not the para itself, but the shoal has to pay the value of the para to the baylim. Even within the Shita of the Tanakhama, there's a big discussion in the Rishonim. What does that mean that he's going to swear that it was Mesa Kedarka? How does he know that it was Mesa Kedarka? So obviously we're assuming that he was there and he does know that it's Mesa. And what if he doesn't know whether it was Mesa Kedarka or not? What if he has no idea whether it was Mesa Kedarka? So that's Machlokas Rishonim. If he doesn't know, the Ramban says that the Socher swears that he doesn't know whether it's Mesa Kedarka, and then he's potter with that Shvua, because it's like saying, it's like when someone says, Manali Biyadcha, and the guy says, Any Yodayim he'll be sunny. I don't really know if you let me any money. So as long as he swears, Any Yodayim he'll be sunny, so that's it. He's off the hook. He doesn't have to pay. So the same over here. The Ravid disagrees. He says, no, that's not what's going on over here. It's not Any Yodayim he'll be sunny. You know what this is parallel to? It's parallel to, you owe me money. You're right, I borrowed money. I don't remember if I paid you back. So that then you're not going to get off the hook with, I don't remember if I paid you back. So because we know bevadai that you borrowed the money, that's what this is really like over here. Okay, says Gemara, I'm going to read the Labai Michti. Socher b'may koni lai para. How is the socher ever koni the rights to this para? B'shvua, that he took a shvua to the masket, namely maskel the socher dal an v'dal shvua seich v'anamishti ina dina badi shol. Let the original owner say, I don't need your shvua. I want to go to the shoel to have this discussion. So that he'll have to pay me. Amalei mi savrit socher b'shvua de kokani lai. Why you think the socher only becomes the owner of the cow through taking a shvua? Mishas misu the kani shvua kidei lav is daito shel bal habayis. No, he's already the owner of it through from the shas misa. The shvua is just to calm down the das of the bal habayis. Amar Rabbi Zeir Pamsha bal neshalim kama paros the socher. He could even come up with a case where he's going to have to pay multiple paros to the socher. The owner is going to have to pay multiple paros to the socher. Echidami agrimineh lemei yomei. He rents it for 100 days. Vahadir shayli minei. The owner then borrows it back letishin yomi for 90 days. Hadar agrimine timnin yomi. He then rents it back from him for 80 days. Hadar shalimine shivin yomi. Then the owner borrows it back for 70 days. Umesa betoch yimei sheilasa. And then it dies during the days of the sheila. So I call sheila sheila mechayev chadapara. A shol is chayev for every time for an animal dying. So for each sheila that he had, and he had two sheilas going on simultaneously over here, he's going to have to pay a separate para. Plus, he's going to have to provide him with a para to work for those 10 days of discrepancy between the rentals and the loans. So he's going to really be out a lot of money. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, we'll pick up tomorrow over there in that discussion of what he has to pay.